you are allowed to fire your providers, whether you have a midwife or an OBGYN that you don't love. Like, don't be afraid to ask questions. Make sure they're on the same level as you. And if they're not, fire them. There's plenty of other providers that will probably be more aligned with your care and what you want in your pregnancy and postpartum journey.
You're listening to the How Do You Deal With podcast with me, your host, Joelle Riding. Each week, we're talking about the parts of life that we all wish we could talk about. I hope you're ready to dive in. Let's get started. What's up, what's up, what's up, guys? How are we doing today? Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you are new here, hello, hello, what's up? Thanks for tuning in. And if you're a regular, nice to see you again. I'm so happy you're here. Today's episode, just wow. Get your notebooks ready. Literally, get your notebooks ready. I'm going to let you get them right now. If you need to pause, do it, because this episode has so much good knowledge. Today, I have Dr. Marissa Holes on the show, and she is a birth educator, and we just dive into everything you ever wanted to know about, like, the birth experience. So talking about, like, home births versus hospital births, we talk about supplements you should be taking, we talk about, like, formula versus breastfeeding, we talk about what your birth plan should be, having a baby during COVID, like, how do you prepare for that? So wow, we talk about so much. I will say that she talks kind of fast. So get ready. And like, if you need a pause and repeat, like, yeah, just have your journals ready, because I have learned so much. I don't plan on having a kid anytime soon. Maybe, who knows? But like, for anyone who is either thinking about having a kid, wants to just know more about the birth experience, who has a friend who's about to have a kid, anything at all, like, it's so nice to hear all your options, all the different pros and cons, and I just learned so much. Wow. So tune in. Let's get going. Thank you, Marissa, for coming on.
Well, guys, welcome back to another amazing episode of How Do You Deal With. Today, I have Marissa. She is a birth educator, which, like, I'm so excited to learn more about, because I am hopefully, maybe, I don't know, on the precipice of having kids sometime in the next 5-10 years, who knows? But like, I feel like it's such an important topic that I'm learning more and more about, because there's so much information about there, like home births, hospital births, how to take care of your baby, how to vouch for your baby, like all the different things. So I'm so excited to have you here, Marissa. Hello, hello. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going, everyone? I'm really excited to be here.
I am so excited that you're here. I connected with Marissa in a Facebook group, and I was just like, hey guys, does anybody have some topics that would fit with my like podcast title? And he reached out to me being like, I am a birth educator. And I was like, oh shit, yes. Okay, let's get you on, because I know I have friends who have been like stressed or worried or like don't know all the options. And so before we dive into all the things, give us a little bit of background about you. So like, how did you become a birth educator? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm actually an animal chiropractor by trade. I went to chiropractic school for humans, but like animals way more.
Like horses or like any animal?
If it's got a spine, I probably adjusted it.
Holy shit, that's amazing. Oh my God. I didn't even know that existed.
No, most people don't until they need me. So I did that. Kids were like not on the horizon ever. I didn't really want them. But, you know, a few years later, we have Odin. That's our first. And so now we have kids. So we have 3 children. And after my first experience, I had picked a home birth just because of my like more holistic mindset from chiropractic school. And then I had some pretty negative experiences after a transfer to the hospital. It was a postpartum transfer. So that means after the baby was born, there were some complications. So they transferred me to the hospital. And I did not have a very good experience there, and knew that I couldn't be the only woman having those experiences. And so took off on a path towards like just educating and empowering women what their birth plan is, whether it's in a hospital, in a birth center, in a home. So just giving women the tools to be empowered during their births. So that's how I got here.
That's really amazing. Can I ask, like, what happens with your first child?
I had a postpartum hemorrhage. So it just means I was bleeding a lot. after the delivery. Luckily, funny, it's kind of kismet, funny story. My son's heart rate had dropped while he was still in utero. And so they called the EMS to come. And then I got the urge to push, which is great. And so I had like five EMS guys in my living room. And I'm like, do you guys mind if I try pushing in the birth tub first? And they're like, go for it. We got you, girl. And so literally gave birth in front of an audience.
Yeah. Sounds like all men too.
They were very good looking too. It was perfect.
Of course. Of course.
Yep. So baby was healthy. He was great. But then I got out of the birth tub and just passed out. And so the EMS were already there. So they just took me to the hospital with baby. And the doctor there was like, you shouldn't have had a home birth. Like, next time you get pregnant, you're coming to me. Like, you won't do a home birth again. Like, pretty much just, I was so stupid for choosing a home birth. My midwife had told him there is a piece of placenta missing because she checks the placenta when that gets delivered. And a piece was missing. And she's like, so she may have a retained placenta. It's something you should definitely check out. And he was like, I'm the doctor, not you. My husband tried to advocate for me. And he was also like, I'm the doctor. So he denied getting an ultrasound to check for retained placenta. And 8 weeks later, after I'd had a hard time breastfeeding, had a brain MRI to rule out Sheehan syndrome, which is, that's a whole other story, found out, nope, it was retained placenta.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Yep. So just, even though I had advocates in my corner, I didn't advocate strongly enough. And it was just not the most fun experience, but I just like, I think it's 1 in 6 women experience mistreatment in the hospital during childbirth. And that number is even higher for women of color. Like, just getting out there and empowering women to advocate for themselves is my main goal, and to reduce these disparities, especially for women and women of color.
Yeah, I'm super interested in finding out more about, like, so a home birth. I was born at home.
Really? That's amazing.
All 5 kids were born at home. And yeah, my mom, I haven't actually like talked to her about it. I should ask, like, was it because she was like more like hippie, or not hippie, but like more just like natural? Or was it because like we couldn't afford to go to the hospital? I should ask her that. But so I have a special place in my heart for home births, and I'm super interested. So like, your first time around, you like, what do you research? What do you do? So you said you had a midwife and then a tub, I think. So like, what is the tub? How do you find a midwife? Like, I'm so interested in all of these questions.
Sure. They're all good ones too. So in Florida, in the state of Florida, you'll typically have certified nurse midwives. So they're nurses prior to going to midwifery training. I'm sure you could do it the other way around too, where you become a midwife and then go get your nursing degree. And they're typically seen in hospitals. There's not a lot of certified nurse midwives doing home births. That's just not where the money is, probably. And then you have your certified professional midwives, and they're not nurses. They just go straight to midwifery and come out to the public. And they are licensed in the state of Florida to do home births and birth center births. And so I found a midwife that was certified. She was a certified professional midwife, and she did home visits the whole time. And she actually gave me this beautiful little book with all the testing that's done, the pros and cons of each test. So I was really informed throughout that entire pregnancy, mainly with the resources that she provided, and then of course with researching on my own. And the birth tub, hers was an inflatable birth tub. It was like really sturdy. It had like handles and a seat and a padded floor, so you could like get on your hands and knees.
So she brings it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you would have to like buy it yourself. Okay.
No, you buy the cover so you can like get an insert. That way you're not like in a birth tub that other people have birthed in.
Right. Yeah. Good. Sanitary.
Don't worry. She cleans it. But yeah, the insert just gives you a nice, you don't have to worry about anything. And then actually this last home birth that I had was with a different provider. And they had, I'm not even kidding you, like the big feeding troughs or like watering trough. And it's just this big Rubbermaid one. And I think it's 500 gallons. It was huge. So you like fill that up. And so there wasn't a seat and there wasn't a cushy bottom, but it was really, really sturdy. So like I was able to like lean over the edge and water wasn't spilling out. So It's just different.
Yeah. So, okay, inflatable tub. And then I love, like, sometimes I'll see pictures on my Instagram feed or like Facebook feed or something of just like home births, like a photographer. So did you have a photographer for like any of your home births?
For my third, yeah. I was on the fence about it. I didn't even like hire her until I was like 38 weeks pregnant, and I went into labor at 41 in some days. So like very last minute, because I was on the fence on if I wanted like a really personal birth or if I wanted that birth photographer there. It was the best money I've ever spent. It was, the pictures were amazing, and like having those memories because it goes so fast.
Yeah, I bet you just like black out and you're like, okay, I have a baby now.
Oh God, and you're leaving me with this baby. Okay.
That's amazing. Do you mind if I ask like how much the photographer was, just because like that's such an interesting like field. I'm so curious like what the range might be.
Yeah, so the going rate in Tampa Bay is between like 1200 and 1800, which is because they're on call essentially from like 37 weeks to 42 weeks. So you never know when they're going to be called out or how long they're even going to be at the birth. You know, some women labor for a very long time.
For sure. Yeah. So tell me, like, so your third birth, you had a home birth and you had a feeding trough is like,
in my living room.
Yeah. Yes. The thing in my head. And how did your labor go? Like, when did the photographer show up? Like, were you prepped? Were you nervous? Like, you've done it two times before that, but like, what was it like having the third time?
Just for some perspective, my second birth was at a hospital. So I had to be transferred because my water broke, but then I didn't go into labor. And after 24 hours, you're legally supposed to transfer because the midwife can no longer give, like, do the delivery. So this was my second home birth after the hospital birth. And so I was like really nervous, of course, because I don't want to transfer to a hospital. I just want my home birth. But I had contractions off and on for like 3 days. And then I'm getting frustrated because I'm like, this is my third time. I should know when I'm going into labor. So she actually came over a few times just to get like pictures of me wondering if I was in labor. She got pictures of me going to my chiropractor and my acupuncturist, and she went everywhere with me. I was very spoiled by my birth photographer, actually.
Wow. You got acupuncture. What was the other thing that you...
Chiropractic care, of course.
Really? So is there a cutoff... I guess not. Like, you can just get acupuncture or chiropractor until like the day of. Like, so did you do it to help alleviate pain, or was it more to like induce yourself? Like, why did you go?
On Saturday, so I started having contractions Friday night, and they were pretty intense and they were very regular, like 40 to 50 seconds long every 5 minutes. And my midwife came at like 3 a.m. and she's like, not impressed. She's like, you're 2 centimeters. Baby's not down at all. Have a glass of wine and go back to bed. I'm like, yeah, okay. Okay. So I woke up at 8 and they were still happening very regularly, pretty intense. And so I called my chiropractor and I'm like, can you meet me at the office? And it wasn't for pain necessarily. It was just to make sure the pelvis was open and the baby didn't have any tension on the uterus so that he could just slide down into that birth canal. It's definitely great for alleviating pain if the pain is caused by like pelvic dysfunction. So highly recommended if you're uncomfortable or if you're trying to get the baby down. And then I went to the acupuncturist, like last ditch effort. I was like, this either needs to stop or speed up. So went to the acupuncturist for that.
Yeah. And then what did the acupuncturist do? Like, where do you put the needles for that?
There were so many needles and I was having so many contractions. So I'm not even sure where they all were.
You're like, just help me.
There were a lot. And then she did some E-stem on the needles. So there was like electrical impulse. And then she did some cupping. So there was some like soft tissue work around the pelvis. I pretty much napped the whole time. It was so good. And then it actually slowed down for a little bit. And I'm like, that's fine. If this stops, if labor stops, it's fine. But then I got home and did some, they're called spinning babies maneuvers. It's like, there's a whole website on how to get baby into like optimal position. So I did one of those and he just like slid down the birth canal. I called the midwives, took a nap. And when they got here, pretty much popped into the birth tub and was in there like less than an hour. And the baby was here.
Wow. Well, I'm glad he eventually came out and everything sounds like it went well.
It was so perfect. It could not have gone better.
I'm so happy for you. That's like, especially because it sounds like, yeah, like your other two experiences were good, but like could have been better. And so I'm so happy you had that third birth to just like have everything be perfect. And it also goes to show like that each pregnancy can be different and each birth story is different. And so like, do you have anything to say about women, yeah, who might be stressed out or who like think like every birth is the same, I'm a pro birth, like I don't know how people think, but like, yeah, do you have anything to say to people like that?
Yes, so my biggest thing is to have a birth plan in place, because it's going to be your biggest advocate, especially now when you don't have a lot of support going with you to your birth, especially in hospitals. But then there's like this caveat where like you can't plan birth. It's almost like have your birth plan, know that it will change, know that all of these things that you've already planned for, you feel confident doing. Even though like I don't plan on going in for an emergency C-section, I have all of my wants and non-negotiables in that plan just in case. So that if I happen to transfer and happen to go into emergency C-section, the doctors and I are on the same page. And I know that we did everything we could prior to that so that I felt confident about the decisions I made during my birth, even if the outcome doesn't seem ideal.
So was this stuff that you had discussed with your midwife and she gave you options, or was this stuff that like you knew from your previous births of like, this is a hard stop for me? And then like, do you write that all out? Or like, how do you, when you say birth plan, like I'm imagining like a little like pamphlet with like, okay, this is what I want, this is what I don't want. And so what was it like for you?
Yeah. So I recommend that a birth plan be maximum 1 to 2 pages. So it's easy for your provider to read. If you have a ton of text in there, they're gonna be like, yeah, that's nice, and you know, put it to the side. For me, it was a lot of previous research from previous births. Like for example, I had Pitocin immediately when I got to the hospital with my second birth, and I wish I had advocated to wait and see if I went into spontaneous labor, because evidence shows that you can have rupture of membranes for like 72 hours before there's any real need to speed up labor. So things like that, you know, it's just personal experience that now I know that needs to be on my birth plan. So getting a birthing educator, taking the birthing classes, or even getting a like childbirth coach to help you create a birth plan is really key to having a well thought out and really thorough birth plan.
Good to know. I literally like just took notes on that because yeah, like I don't know. I'm sure this is stuff that you could probably Google, but it's so nice to hear from like you and just like to visualize and just to have more of an awareness, which is literally like, I feel like what you're on this earth to do. So like, thank you for coming on this podcast and not only educating me, but also like all the listeners too.
We don't know what we don't know. So having like something laid out to be like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that test or that procedure, or know the risks and benefits of a certain procedure. Like we don't know that we didn't even know it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate this so much. I would love to talk about 2020 in general. Like what an insane year. Like one, I feel like we have so much information at our fingertips. It's amazing. It's also not good. and then on top of that, we get thrown into this pandemic. And so like hospitals are so weird and crazy right now. So I bet like, I know some people who are pregnant or who plan on having a baby, and like, how do you plan for 2020? Like, especially with COVID, do you have any advice for like that?
It's been a little crazy. I know so many people that are pregnant and almost feel like their pregnancy and all the excitement has been robbed because you can't have showers, your partner isn't allowed to come with you to your ultrasounds. Prenatal care looks a lot different in 2020. We're talking virtual appointments, less frequent appointments. So women aren't being seen as often. While it sounds all negative, there's actually some studies coming out saying that during this pandemic, that there's been less preemies being born. So there could be something to people taking it easy and staying home, less medical intervention. So there's some exciting stuff coming out of the pandemic. But for a lot of women, for their first time, second time, even third time, like I definitely think things have changed dramatically in the prenatal world. So a lot of hospitals aren't letting birth support come into the hospital with women and birthing people. So you've got your partner, and that's typically it, if they're even allowing partners to come in. If your partner has to leave for whatever reason, if you've got kids that they need to pick up or organize care for, and they leave the hospital, they don't get to come back in a lot of hospitals. There is only one hospital in the Tampa Bay area allowing both a birth partner and a doula to come in. So that's all of Tampa Bay, and only one hospital is allowing a second support person. So women aren't getting their doulas, they're not getting their birth photographers or their videographers, their mothers, their sisters, their aunts and friends. Like, people aren't getting to experience this special experience with their people. So I do recommend, there's a couple of ways to get creative during this whole COVID thing. One is getting clear on your hospital's policy before you go into labor. Know who you can bring with you. Plan for that. That way your partner doesn't have to leave if they have a policy where they can't come back in. And really set up that plan prior to going into labor. Even if that means getting like a sibling doula that comes and takes care of your kids for you, there's professionals out there literally called sibling doulas that will come and take care of your kids. They're typically used in home births and birth center births. But this would be a good time to get a sibling doula that comes and stays at the house while you go to the hospital if you're going to be in a hospital.
Real quick, what is the difference between like a sibling doula and a nanny or like a babysitter?
Great question. So typically sibling doulas are helping the kids be interactive in the birth situation. So I actually had a sibling doula in case the kids were awake while I was giving birth, so that they can read the kids and read the mom and figure out, is this an appropriate time for the kids to be in the birthing area? Is one of the kids getting overwhelmed? Do I need to remove them? That way the mom's not worried about any of that. The kids are taken care of and they can be a participant of the birth as much as they can handle it. So mine was fantastic. She's a friend from my rugby team and she's great with my kids. Like, she's a kid whisperer.
You gotta love it.
Best part. Well, the birth photographer and her, amazing. So my son woke up while I was in labor and I'm like, nope, just go get him, Lisa. And so Lisa came in and we were watching on the little camera because we have it. And Odin just like melts into her lap and falls back asleep. And I'm like, I don't have to worry about it. It was amazing.
What a like interesting little thing. Like, I never would have thought of that. And you're right. Like, it's such an ease of mind because like, mother instinct, you're like, I gotta take care of my babies. And it's like, even if you're in the middle of like pushing out a baby, like you're still probably thinking like, oh, are they okay? Like, can I help them? Yeah. And so having that person to just be like, I got you, girl. Like, that is a really good tip.
Right. And nannies and babysitters and family are great to watch your kids, but they might not know the nuances of pregnancy and birth and when is too much for a kid or mom. So yeah, having like a sibling, even a postpartum doula that helps take care of kids with a mom would be a good fit for that. So that's why I recommend a sibling doula. Doulas are just amazing anyway, because they're like immersed into the birthing culture and they have those skills. That actually goes right into my next point with considering a virtual or digital doula. So someone you can have at your fingertips in the hospital. If you have questions, need someone to advocate for you, or you need support, or if your birth partner doesn't know how to support you with pain relieving techniques, positioning techniques, you'll have that support that can talk to your birth partner, talk to you, maybe even step in and listen when the doctor comes in and help you understand that information. So getting a virtual or digital doula is a great idea. Bringing a GoPro or a camera on a tripod, that way you can still get some pictures, get some video. That way you don't lose on that like amazing experience, because let me tell you, it's amazing having pictures to look back on. Even if you don't think you're gonna like love looking at yourself all sweaty and like your face in weird ways, it's still, they're the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it literally, is there anything more beautiful on this earth than a woman giving birth to life? Like, I do not know.
Something I know, a lot of people, it's so important to have their family with them, their moms and their sisters, their aunts, their friends. So set up a FaceTime, Zoom, or even a Google Hangout so that your whole family can be there, like on your laptop at the hospital. Some things to plan for, making sure your family knows how to sign on. So going and checking to make sure your grandma knows how to get onto Google FaceTime before you go into labor.
Amazing.
And then making sure maybe you have like a hotspot, because sometimes hospital Wi-Fi, pretty terrible. So bring your hotspot from your cell phone provider. And then I think the last two that are, I think, are most important are making it feel like home. Bring your blanket, bring your pillow, bring your favorite essential oils, snacks, bring snacks. It's very important. You know, your favorite t-shirt. You don't have to be in that hospital gown the whole time. Pictures, whatever makes you feel like home, bring that with you. Like, move into this hospital. Bring a house.
I love it.
And then the last one is getting clear on your birth vision and having your birth plan printed for your provider, because you will have to be your own advocate. If you don't have your doula or your birth partner there with you, you have to be your own advocate. So prepare in advance. Know what your hard no's are and understand what the options are going to be for you once you get to the hospital.
What are some other things that like you should consider for your birth plan that like maybe, and this is someone who like, I have no idea. So like, I'm sorry if this is a silly question, but yeah, like what are some things besides epidural, not epidural that you can plan for?
Sure. That's a big one. So, you know, you're already a step ahead of the game. Things like antibiotics, group B strep testing, which typically you'll have done at 36, 37 weeks. Well, 35. Anyway, other pain meds, they have NO2. And, you know, if you don't want to be offered those things, you want your staff to know up front. Because I know me, there's a couple times during labor that you're like, if someone had walked in and been like, do you want an epidural? I'd have been like, yes, yes. But I knew that wasn't what I really wanted. So I had to tell everyone up front, don't even come in here and ask me about it. If I want something, I will physically ask. Birth position, a lot of doctors want you on your back, legs up, and that's not conducive for everyone. So letting your provider know ahead of time, like, no, I'll be birthing in a squatting position, or I'd like to try this position. Knowing if your provider and your location offer water births, or if they'll only let you labor in the tub. These are all things you should probably have asked your provider prior to coming in, because if a water birth or even just laboring water is a big point for you, then you need to make sure you have a provider and a location that offer that.
So are there actual hospitals that allow water births? I didn't know that.
So it depends on the provider and the hospital. So a lot of hospitals are starting to put nice big soaking tubs in their birthing suites. Now, some will only let you labor. Some won't let you labor at all, especially if you're on Pitocin and you're on continual fetal monitoring, unless they have a portable one. And then some providers will not let you give birth in the water. So these are all questions while you're interviewing your provider and location to get the lowdown on.
So what would be the, for your opinion, like the greatest difference between like a home birth and a water birth in a hospital? Because I feel like, and maybe you just went over it a little bit, but like for me, more safety of mind of like, oh, I'm going to have a water birth in a hospital because if anything happens, I'm closer, versus like, why would maybe I opt for having it at home?
Sure. That's a great question. For me personally, I wanted more hands off. So my midwives, literally, they took my vitals. And if I didn't want them to take my vitals at that particular time, I said, no, thank you. In hospitals, I feel like you're on a time clock. They want you in the birthing suite, out of the birthing suite, and into postpartum care because someone else is going to come in. So it definitely feels like you're on a time clock. It's not always evidence-based, unfortunately. You have a lot of providers still that this is the way we do things, even though it's not evidence-based anymore. So I feel like midwifery care is much more evidence-based. It's much more personal, and you're just in your own home. You're a lot more relaxed, and that makes labor much easier.
Another thing I think that is super interesting to talk about and super important is I feel like women of color are specifically like, I'm not sure if it's like the birth rates or mortality rates or some rate I know is like, it's just crazy compared to white women and just how it's honestly just disgusting. And I hate that. And so, you know, for people who might not know about like the difference discrepancies for women of color versus like white women in hospitals or for home births. Can you maybe touch on that?
So women of color have significantly worse health outcomes, both for maternal and fetal mortality. They're dying at way higher rates than white women are. And that also applies to the LGBT community as well. Like the system, like the hospital system, our medical system in general is just set up to not support these people in their pregnancy and postpartum journey. 63% of pregnancy deaths are actually preventable. And most of the women that are dying here in the United States, side note, women in the United States in general die more than any other industrialized country. It's terrifying. Happens at like in postpartum care. So these doctors are missing things and not treating women after they've given birth. And it's unacceptable. Like the way we see prenatal and postnatal care needs to shift in the United States. A lot of people talk about the safety of home births versus hospital births, and like cesarean rate in hospitals is much higher at 30% versus home births, which is like under 10% where they get transferred and go to cesarean. Interventions used in a hospital are so much higher than with home births. In transfers from a home birth to a hospital birth, most women transfer not for safety and not for emergency reasons, just because they're exhausted. So they want to go to the hospital, get their epidural, take a nap if they've been laboring for a long time with those pain medications. So the safety in home birth is pretty comparable to that of a hospital birth. And we're seeing less discrepancy with maternal and fetal health outcomes for colored women, women of color, in home births, birth center births as well. There's so many grassroots efforts for women of color by women of color. There's a wonderful midwife, I think she's over in Orlando, who predominantly sees women of color, and her health outcomes are amazing. So it's just great to see. I know there's a birth center up in Minneapolis that is owned by a woman of color, and they predominantly see women of color in their practice, and they see great outcomes. So I think the best thing we can do is support businesses owned by women of color that support minorities for their prenatal and postnatal outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I heard about this, like originally, like maybe it was last year or this year, it just blew me away. Like, I think you just mentioned all the stats that I had read, but like, it's just not okay. And I love that you mentioned those doulas and those birthing centers, because we need more of that. And if you support them, then they'll continue their mission, and they have support, like supports everything. And so I am happy that you mentioned them, and I hope that it just inspires or creates more support for these centers, for these women, because yeah, they need it. And I'm so happy you touched on that.
It's even crazy to see how little support there is for women of color with breastfeeding even. So finding people in your community, doulas, lactation consultants that are knowledgeable of these disparities, knowledgeable of why there's such a gap, and addressing those gaps so that we can have better outcomes.
And talking about breastfeeding, like that is a whole thing, but like, let's dive into breastfeeding, because I'm interested to hear like facts from you, because I only have like my perceived knowledge. But the United States with breastfeeding it's just like so taboo. Like I think maybe 6 months and then like, no, like for most women. And so I know that I have, like I was breastfed till I was like 2.
Yeah.
Awesome. My mama's kick ass. but I have like, you know, some other friends I know that like breastfed until that age, or they were just considered heroes or like weird, or like, it's just considered this like other thing. Versus I remember when I traveled in South America, like I will never forget this. I was at a park and there was this mom sitting on a bench, and there was this little boy, and he had to be like 4 or 5. I don't know, but like a little boy, and he was out and running, and he like went up to his mom, and she just like lifted her shirt. He just like got a little drink, and then he just kept playing. And it was like the most, it was the most shocking thing to me, because I was like, that shouldn't be shocking, but it is really shocking. And also, why isn't it like that? So let's talk about breastfeeding in the US.
Yeah, breastfeeding is definitely taboo in the US. We have very low rates of initiation and continuous breastfeeding at 6 months, a year, and 2 years. Like lower than a lot of other countries. I don't know. There's a great documentary called The Milky Way, which talks about, in particular, like the formula industry and their marketing strategies to pretty much discourage breastfeeding so that they could make a profit. So that's frustrating. I mean, you can see it. It's indoctrinated into our culture. Hospitals pass out Similac and they're like pushing it when their babies are first born. So luckily, a lot of hospitals do provide lactation consultants, but there's formula in your room when you get to the postpartum care, and there's pacifiers and all of these things that are not conducive to breastfeeding for moms. I know when I was in the hospital with my second and he had a little bit of jaundice, and they're like, this will clear up faster if you give him formula. And I'm like, well, I'm breastfeeding, so that's not happening. And I'm like, can I do donor milk? So he's getting more milk to help pass the bilirubin. And they were like, well, it was just going to be a big to-do. And so I eventually just gave in and let them give him formula, even though it was in my birth plan this time, absolutely no formula. So it's just a learning experience, but it's just indoctrinated in us in the hospital setting. Pretty much right off the bat, they're going to send you home and you're probably going to have formula in your to-go bag. So you see the whole aisles at Publix or Walmart full of formula. Places like the Netherlands, there's like a tiny little section on the bottom of the shelf in their grocery stores for formula, because they do such a good job of supporting women throughout the whole breastfeeding journey, which is also to include like really great paternity and maternity leave. So we just don't support parents the way they do in other countries that are seeing success with breastfeeding.
I was totally going to just about to say that, because like as you were speaking, I realized like, oh, well, of course the US is bad about breastfeeding because we have 6 weeks of maternity leave. And so like you're having to go to work and what are you going to do? Like, you know, and like not all women love pumping, or I don't know, but
it's terrible. It's terrible. Moms that pump exclusively are freaking heroes.
Yeah. I literally just realized that like, I guarantee it's a huge part of why breastfeeding is the way it is here, because we're just not given the time to heal and to bond with our baby.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very backwards. We should be supporting these mothers, these parents. It just, there's better health outcomes. Like it's in the science. We talk about higher IQs, healthier immune systems. Why would we not want that for our population? And this is not to shame anyone that formula feeds, because I understand how hard it is to breastfeed and that sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's a better choice, sometimes you can't. And I totally get that. So no shaming for formula use, because it is there for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that like I've seen on my feed, like I'll see people who like had a baby and they can't breastfeed, and like the overwhelming like shame that they talk about of like that they place on themselves, but then from like other people. And it's like already when you're a parent, I feel like you're given so much unwanted criticism, but then to on top of that, like especially for women that like can't lactate, like that's gotta suck. So yeah, absolutely no shame. Whatever path works for you, like do it, girl.
Yeah, I mean, even with this is my third attempt at breastfeeding, and I still supplement with formula because sometimes mom is touched out. So then I still feel I'm choosing to give him formula. Then I'm like, oh, some women don't get this choice. Like how I should be just always breastfeeding. If I can do it, I should be. I like still get the like negative in my head about it. So it's funny, even though I know better, and I would never talk to someone that picked formula feeding over breastfeeding like that. I talk to myself like that. It's terrible, that like indoctrination that we get.
Yeah, that's such a valid point. Wow. That just goes with anything in life. Like the way that we talk to ourselves, we would never talk to other people that way.
No. And if you do talk to people that way, shame on you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like go in time out. You need to reconsider your life.
That's right.
Well, this has been super like interesting to find out more about. When it comes to formula, are there like brands that are better than others? Are there like organic formula? Like what's that world like?
Oh man, let me tell you, navigating the formula industry. So they do have some organic formulas, though I don't think all the ingredients are. There's some like DIY goat formulas that you can do with goat milk so you don't use dairy. The thing that drives me the most crazy, first of all, is finding like a clean formula. It's really probably impossible, just because there's so many manufacturing issues. So you're going to get, not, I don't want to say tainted, but there's definitely going to be some byproducts coming from that manufacturing process that aren't ideal. And then if you get like kids that are really gassy and you go to like the formula for gassy kids, so like sensitive stomach, the first ingredient or the second ingredient is corn syrup. So that's your options. You have, you know, regular formula. And if your kid's sick to it, then you go to the sensitive formula and there's high fructose corn syrup. So the formula industry has a long way to go, in my opinion. I mean, you do what you do to make sure your baby is fed and healthy, but there should be some better options for parents out there.
Yeah, good to know. Is formula like expensive? What's like the price range on formula? Because I don't even like, I don't know how much a baby needs every day. Like, I think it's slowly, like, it's less once they get older. I don't know, but yeah.
So it depends on the formula you get. You can get like Target brand or Walmart brand, which is cheaper. I just use the stuff they give you in the hospital. It's like Similac Pro Advance, which is on the more expensive side. Now, if you start getting organic, like cleaner stuff, it's going to be even more than that. But I usually pay like $30 for a canister, but because I do breastfeed, it lasts us a very long time. So I save money there, but it's not cheap to feed your kids formula. That's for sure. But I will say it's probably not cheap to breastfeed either, because by the time you buy the pumping supplies, the supplements, nursing bras, it probably adds up to about the same. Feeding your kids is just expensive.
Yeah. Right. Another mouth to feed.
That's right.
You mentioned supplements. Like, let's talk about that. Like, so, you know, do you have advice for prenatal supplements versus postnatal? Do you have certain brands that you recommend or that you love, or like, what do you use?
So I use Smarty Pants. Is that the one I use? It's in my cupboard. It's a gummy because I get really sick during pregnancy. And the last thing I want is to feel really, really garbagey on top of taking the prenatal vitamins, because some vitamins can make you nauseous. I'll have to send you, so you can put it in the show notes, what brands that I recommend if you like really want to go clean, because my gummies probably aren't the cleanest. But I do recommend, bare minimum, get a food-based vitamin so that all of the supplements that are in it, all the vitamins and minerals, are from a food base, not synthetic. I did take a DHA supplement because I was craving sushi the whole time, so I figured I needed some more like fatty acids in my diet, and that helped. Like, it cut my sushi cravings. And then postnatally, just keep taking your prenatal so that you balance all your hormones. Or postnatally, I recommend just taking a prenatal supplement, the one you've been taking, just so that everything stays balanced as far as your vitamins and minerals. You may need to take an iron supplement if your blood work shows that your iron is low, but your doctor or your midwife will be recommending that as you're on your journey.
This has been amazing. Like, I have so many notes, literally like 2 pages of notes, guys. So I hope anyone listening that is considering or is going to have a baby, or like, yeah, like, take notes, because this has been incredible knowledge. I'm so grateful you came on. Is there anything else that you want to like educate or let us know about, or like something that I didn't ask about that you wish that I had?
No, I feel like we really, really touched on everything. I guess one thing I want to add is that you are allowed to fire your providers, whether you have a midwife or an OBGYN that you don't love. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Make sure they're on the same level as you. And if they're not, fire them. There's plenty of other providers that will probably be more aligned with your care and what you want in your pregnancy and postpartum journey. Do not be afraid to fire your provider.
Great advice. Great, great, great ending note. I love that. Good advice. Always fight for yourself. And yeah, just the importance of like a doula or a sibling doula, something I learned about today. I'm so excited. But yeah, having those people in your corner just to advocate for you, because you're going to be doing all the work. So I'm sure like you need those people, because you're going to be exhausted or not thinking right, or like, yeah. So yeah, the importance of like having people in your corner, and then also just, you can fire people. We give you permission.
Yes. Here's your permission. Advocate the shit out of yourself.
Amazing. Well, I am so grateful that you came on and like talked all about this. I've learned so much. Like, can people hire you?
So I have an Instagram that's like got most of my content, and it's got links to like some of my resources. I'm not currently taking any clients right now just because I'm so postpartum. But my website doesn't have a domain right now, so they can just get there from my Instagram. I don't have it together. Okay.
Nobody does. It's fine. Well, I am so appreciative of everything you have taught me, like, and everyone listening. Like, you're just a wealth of knowledge. I'm so grateful, like, especially because you just had a baby. So thank you for coming on and taking the time to teach us. If people want to, like, find out more about you, or maybe eventually one day, like, sign on as a client or something like that, like, how can people find you?
My Instagram is just Dr. Marissa Holds. I have a ton of great freebies on there in my link. And I'm always posting about my birth experience, new information that comes out with research, evidence-based support, because if it doesn't have evidence behind it, then it doesn't matter. It's not real. So definitely check me out on Instagram, because there's a ton of great information on there.
Awesome. And I will link that in the show notes for you guys as well. And then obviously, yeah, when this episode comes out, you guys definitely need to follow her. And just, yeah, thank you again, Marissa, for coming on. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast. And I love sharing this information. It's so important.
So important. Well, girl, I'll talk to you later. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
So yeah, basically everything that you guys have ever wanted to know about birthing, I feel like we went over. Like, wow. Thank you again, Marissa, for coming on and just, especially like, yeah, like right after having a baby, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your journey and like what you've learned from having kids and just educating us, because there's so much that I didn't know about. There's so much I want to know more about now. And just, I feel a lot more prepped and ready to eventually maybe like have kids or think about it, because yeah, there's just so many things you brought up that I had never considered. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope that this episode provided you with as much value as it did for me. If it did, please take a screenshot and like share it on your stories, on social media, tag Marissa so that we can just get your feedback, because I am just so appreciative of her time and all of the knowledge she shared with us. Guys, thank you again. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you have an amazing, amazing week. I'm going to put all of her information in the show notes, as well as the resources and documentaries that she mentioned in the show. So you guys can find all that on our website. Thank you again. And I hope you all have an amazing week. Until next time, guys. Peace.